Hey, welcome to the Growth.me summary of Made in Japan, Akio Morita, and Sony. Made in Japan is the autobiography of Akio Morita, who co-founded Sony and grew it to become one of the largest electronics companies in the world. Akio shares his advice for management, leadership, and innovation. He also explains many differences in working culture between Japan and the West. Our top quote from this book is, "No matter how good or successful you are, or how clever or crafty, your business and its future are in the hands of the people you hire. To put it a bit more dramatically, the fate of your business is actually in the hands of the youngest recruit on the staff." End quote. And taking a quick look at the online reviews, on Amazon, this book has 4.4 stars, and on Goodreads, it has 4.1 stars. In the positive reviews, people say they liked hearing the story behind Sony and the interwoven explanations of Japanese history and culture. And the critical reviews, some people believe sections of this book that are about economics and trade may be outdated because it was published in the 1980s. So let's begin. Sony creates electronics that make people excited, and they've been doing this very successfully for over 50 years. You probably have some Sony products in your home. In fact, right now I'm wearing some great headphones made by Sony, although they appear to not be made in Japan, but in Thailand, actually. Even Steve Jobs was a big fan of Sony. He visited their headquarters many times, offering his opinion on their newest products, and he was surely inspired by Sony's ultra-popular Walkman, the first really portable music player that was released 20 years before the Apple iPod. Today, Sony is a globally respected brand name, but when the company was founded in 1946, it was just a few engineers trying to design some rice cookers and radio parts in an old Tokyo building. In this book summary, you'll learn not just about Sony's amazing rise, but also about how Made in Japan went from being a marker of low quality to a symbol of pride. So, as we've said, Akio Morita co-founded Sony, and he did it with Masaru Ibuka. And then in 1976, he became chairman of the board and CEO of the company. In his free time, he liked tennis, golf, and skiing. He died in 1999. And of course, this book is his autobiography, so you'll be hearing many more details from his life very soon. And now let's begin with lesson one, spark passion. Akio's fascination with electronics begins. It was almost 100 years ago, in 1921, that Akio Morita was born to a wealthy family living in Nagoya, Japan. For many generations, the family had passed down a successful business making sake, an alcohol popular in Japan. Akio says his childhood was truly privileged, growing up in a large house with maids, butlers, and many other uncommon luxuries. His family loved to purchase the latest products from the West, including a Ford Model T car, a General Electric refrigerators and appliances, and a music playing machine called a Victrola. They were also one of the first families in their city to purchase a phonograph, a new kind of higher quality electric music player. Akio vividly remembers feeling amazed listening to the clear, beautiful sound coming from that new machine, compared to the scratchy, low-quality sound of their old Victrola. And it was experiences like that that sparked Akio's lifetime passion for technology. As a teenager, he began reading many books and magazines about building electronics, and he even succeeded in making a crude audio recorder based on the directions in those magazines. Electronics became an obsession for him, taking up a lot of the time that he should have been studying for school. And in school, he always did well in math and science, but not so much in the other subjects, so he went to Osaka University to study physics. Actually, his parents would have preferred that he study economics. And they had always assumed that as the eldest son, Akio would eventually take over the family business. So from an early age, Akio was told to sit in the business meetings with his father so he could begin to see how they managed everything. I think that's a lot of pressure for a teenager. My own parents had a small restaurant when I was growing up, but I probably would have felt really trapped if they expected me to carry on the family business from the time I was born. To summarize this first lesson, Akio Morita was born into a wealthy family. They always had the latest imported luxuries, including an early electric music player called a phonograph, and these kinds of gadgets sparked Akio's lifelong fascination with technology, and so he eventually went to study physics at Osaka University. And now we have lesson two, Begin Anew, End of a War and Birth of a Company. So it was the 1940s, and Japan was at war with America and parts of Asia. Akio Morita didn't want to be drafted into the army, so he signed up to the Japanese Navy instead. And this would allow him to avoid being sent overseas and even to continue his studies in physics. And then after graduating university, he was sent by the Navy to a large house in the countryside where he helped research heat-seeking weapons for the Navy. And it was in that house that Akio met his future business partner, Masaru Iibuka, whom he would describe as a brilliant electronics engineer in this book. So at that time, Iibuka was in his 30s, a bit older than Akio, and he was running an electronics parts factory that employed about 1,500 people. So in the middle of that war, Akio and Iibuka would often talk about starting a technology company together in the future. And then after the two atomic bombs were dropped on the Japanese cities in 1945, the Japanese military surrendered and the war was over. Almost 3 million Japanese people had died in the war, but the Morita family was grateful their three sons were unharmed. And Akio recalls that people were feeling very relieved that the war was over, but also apprehensive about the future, like they didn't know how the Americans would be treating them. Now, during the war, America had heavily bombed many of the major Japanese cities, and it was in one of the Tokyo neighborhoods that was full of these bombed-out ruins that Masaru Iibuka started a small new company. In that company, they first tried making a new type of rice cooker, but that failed. And then they tried making adapters for radios that would allow people to listen to shortwave frequencies. These were frequencies which had been banned during wartime. And as it turned out, there was a great demand for these types of adapters, and they sold quite a few. Meanwhile, Akio was asked to help teach physics at a Tokyo university. And while he was there, he went to visit Iibuka, whom he'd kept in touch with, which I'm guessing took a lot more effort to keep in touch before the days of the internet. And they decided they would go into business together, and they formed a new company named Tokyo Tsushin Togyo, which means Tokyo Telecommunications Engineering Company. But before they did that, they first had to get permission from Akio's father, who graciously released his firstborn son, Akio, from the obligation of leading their family business. I think that's quite a cultural difference from the West. Like, in most Western countries, you wouldn't even think of asking your parents for permission to go do a career or to marry someone, I guess. And speaking of doing business in Japan, in the 1960s, there was a totally different person. There was a young kid from America named Phil Knight. Phil loved running and he wanted to start a shoe company. And Phil had seen Japanese cars become popular in America. And he had this crazy idea that Japanese shoes could also succeed. Now, he didn't really know what he was doing, but he flew to Japan and he convinced a shoe manufacturer to sign a deal with him, which launched his own business that is now known as Nike. In his own book, Phil offers this guidance for young, ambitious people. Here's a quote. I tell young people in their mid-20s not to settle for a job or a profession or even a career. Seek a calling. Even if you don't know what that means, seek it. If you're following your calling, the fatigue will be easier to bear, the disappointments will be fuel, the highs will be like nothing you've ever felt. End quote. And if you are interested in that type of advice and in Phil Knight's entrepreneurial story, you can read more in our summary of Shoe Dog by Phil Knight at growth.me. But to summarize this second lesson, Akio joined the Japanese Navy mostly to avoid being sent overseas during World War II. He was helping to research heat-seeking weapons when he met Masaru Iibuka, a great electronics engineer. After the war, the two co-founded Tokyo Telecommunications Engineering Company, which would later be rebranded Sony. And now lesson three, notice ideas. Sony's first major product is born accidentally. So after the surrender, Japan was occupied by American forces that changed Japan's constitution, economy, laws, and political system. Their aim was to make it impossible for Japan's military to gain control of the country and go to war again. So Akio Iibuka's new company landed a contract from some of these American forces to install some new equipment in a radio station. And over in that station, Iibuka saw an American officer carrying a machine that could record audio on plastic tape cassettes. Now, this was new technology that was not yet available in Japan, but Iibuka believed their company could be very successful in making these machines and introducing them into Japan. And he convinced that officer to come to their small company and to show that tape recorder to their engineers. Afterwards, the engineers were able to quickly make their own working recording machine, but they couldn't really make the recording tape. They had a lot of trouble with that, because in post-war Japan, they simply didn't have access to the right materials, like plastic. And so they experimented with many other types of materials for a long time, but they couldn't really make them work. They even managed to make some recording tape out of paper, but the audio quality was very poor. Well, eventually they did find the right materials, and then their machine was ready for sale. Can you imagine that? Iibuka basically stumbled across Sony's first major product idea. And I guess this story demonstrates that great founders always have their eyes open for new ideas everywhere they go. Personally, as someone who has some small online businesses, whenever I'm browsing the internet, part of my mind is always looking for little ideas that I can borrow to improve my own websites, like small elements on different websites I can use on my own projects. And by the way, the founder of Walmart was Sam Walton. He started with one small store in one small town and grew his business into the largest retail company in the world. And he was always looking around for new ideas too. From the early days, he would always visit his competitors' stores all the time and be analyzing what they were doing, taking notes on his little yellow notepad, and he would always tell his Walmart managers to do the same thing, to always be visiting the competition and looking for at least one good idea to try in their own stores. And that type of learning is perhaps even more important than reading books or trade magazines, as he would often do. And you can learn more in our summary of his autobiography, Made in America by Sam Walton, on our growth.me. To summarize this lesson, Iibuka randomly saw an American officer using an audio tape recording machine, and he believed they could be the first Japanese company to make a similar machine. After many experiments, their engineers were able to make their own working audio recorder and plastic tape cassettes. Now we have lesson four. Sell quickly. If you build it, they won't come. So their company began making the tape recorders, but then they ran into another big new problem. Nobody wanted to buy them. When they showed that machine to people, Most people said it was a cool toy, but it was way too expensive and heavy. In fact, it weighed over 70 pounds. And this was a huge wake-up call for both Akio and Ibuka. They had both believed that if you build a quality product, then people would come to buy it. But now Akio was learning that you must also know how to communicate the value of your product to the people who can benefit from it. And I'm sure many of us can relate to that problem, whether we've had a business that never really made sales, or an online blog or video channel or social media page that never attracted much attention. And so after that failure, Akio tried a different approach. He searched for a target customer group who really needed those machines most. And at that time in Japan, there was a national shortage of stenographers, people who write down everything said in a courtroom. And so Akio went to present the audio recorders to the Japanese Supreme Court, and they immediately bought 20 of them. And then he sold many more tape recorders to school systems who needed to play translations of the new American curriculum to their students. And by 1952, their company was selling a lot of tape recorders because the public had slowly become aware of the machines and educated of their benefits. And over the years, Akio learned more important tips related to sales, branding, and marketing. Here are three of them. Tip one is always build your own brand, not others. In 1948, the solid-state transistor was invented by Bell Labs. Recognizing the potential of that discovery, Sony quickly got a license to use transistors in their products. And by 1955, Sony had managed to build a transistor radio. So Akio traveled to America looking for large buyers of this radio, but he couldn't find any. But then a well-known company named Bulova offered to place a large order, but only if their own brand name was on the radios. And although he really needed those sales, Akio refused because he believed Sony should always be building their own brand rather than being an invisible manufacturer for other companies. And in this book, Made in Japan, he would write that was the best decision I ever made. Okay, tip number two is design a great sales impression. In 1957, they made a small transistor radio marketed as being pocketable. Actually, it was a little too big to fit inside a regular shirt pocket, so the company sewed bigger pockets onto all their salespeople's shirts. You see, they really wanted their customers to see that radio being pulled out of the salesperson's pocket to highlight how small it was. And I am reminded of Steve Jobs pulling the MacBook Air out of a paper envelope when he introduced that groundbreaking product to the world. In fact, if you go back and look at the keynote of the MacBook Air, some people gasped out loud when they saw the MacBook coming out of the envelope and they saw how thin it was. That's the kind of impression that you really want to create. And tip number three is choose a memorable brand name. So in 1958, their company name changed from Tokyo Telecommunications Engineering Company to Sony. They recognized their old name was too difficult to remember, especially for international customers, and they also didn't want to make a separate graphic logo. They wanted that name Sony to always be visible on all their products as both their name and their logo. Okay, so here's a quote from this book. I've always believed that a trademark is the life of an enterprise and that it must be protected boldly. A trademark and a company name are not just clever gimmicks. They carry responsibility and guarantee the quality of the product. End quote. To summarize this lesson, nobody bought their tape recorder in the beginning, so Akio had to learn sales and how to communicate the value of their product to the right target customers, like courthouses and school systems. Then in 1957, their small radio wouldn't fit in salespeople's shirt pockets, so they sewed larger pockets on. And in 1958, they rebranded as Sony to make their name more memorable and short. And now we have lesson five, manage growth, cultural differences between Japan and America. It wasn't long before over 50% of Sony's products were being sold abroad, especially to America. Because of this, Akio Morita believed he should better understand foreign countries and, in his words, become a citizen of the world. So he moved to New York with his family to establish Sony America. And after many months of hard work, in 1960, all his efforts paid off when Sony became the first Japanese company ever to be listed on a U.S. stock exchange. Along the way, Akio learned there were many deep cultural differences between Japan and the West, especially in the working cultures. Here are a few of the differences. First, lifetime employment versus his career mobility. In Japan, someone who graduates university and is newly hired at a company generally expects to stay there for their whole career of 20 to 30 years. You see, there's a lot of social pressure for employees not to quit and also for management not to fire or lay off people. But in America, it's normal for people to change jobs every few years or to get fired quickly. In Akio's opinion, the Japanese approach is better for achieving what he sees as management's most important goal, which is creating a feeling that everyone in the company is like a family and that they share the same fate. Okay, a second difference is long-term thinking versus short-term thinking. Akio says Japanese companies are more likely to see value in long-term investment, and their system has fewer short-term incentives. For example, he was visiting an American television factory, and he recommended the manager to buy some new machines to increase workers' productivity. And the manager surprised Akio by replying that he wouldn't be investing in new machines because that would decrease quarterly profits, which his personal compensation was based on. So there are lots of these short-term incentives built into, I guess, American business. A third difference is non-confrontational versus direct language. The Japanese language is structured in a way that forces people almost to be polite and indirect, according to Akio. But Americans often strongly argue and disagree with each other, even while remaining friends. Now, his Japanese associates would often be shocked witnessing a Western-style discussion, but Akio would assure them that it is just regular conversation. And a fourth difference is conservation versus wastefulness. In Japanese culture, there's an important idea called motonai, which means that everything is a gift from the creator, so wasting anything is almost like a sin. As a result, Japanese people value compact, energy-efficient products, and they have a higher rate of recycling, among many more examples he shares in the book. But in America, Akio was often shocked to see a lot more wastefulness. Like, for example, people would throw out a big newspaper after just skimming it one morning for a few minutes. To summarize this lesson, in 1960, Akio temporarily moved to New York with his family, where he helped Sony become the first Japanese company on the U.S. stock market. Along the way, he learned how Japanese culture differs from the West, with their lifetime employment, longer-term thinking bias, indirect language, and non-wastefulness. And now we have lesson six, inspire creativity. Lead with a well-defined vision. Sony has always tried to be a pioneer and create new types of products rather than staying in conventional industries. Now, in this book, Akio says they invest 6 to 10% of their sales into new research and development. But spending alone isn't enough to create innovation. You must also inspire your people with an ambitious, concrete aim. So in the 1960s, Sony was selling many color televisions, and at that time they believed a home video recorder would be popular, but the technology to make that did not yet exist. In 1969, they invented U-Matic video cassettes, which were far smaller than the old video reels, and they became very popular for business use, but they were still too big for home consumers. And then one day, Masaru Ibuka sat down in a meeting with top Sony engineers, and he put a paperback book on the table, and he told all of them that Sony's top goal was to make a video cassette of this size. And that clear vision led to the Betamax cassette, which became very popular. Although it did eventually lose out to the VHS cassettes, which became the dominant format. Now, Sony's most famous product, the Walkman, was born in a similar way. One day, Ibuka walked into Akio's office, and he explained that he was using one of their bigger tape recorders to listen to music, but it was just too heavy and inconvenient to carry around so much. So Akio was inspired to make a very portable tape music player with lightweight headphones. He told Sony engineers to take the smallest tape recorder they had and then remove the recording parts. That machine, which was called the Walkman, was introduced in 1979, and it went on to be a huge success, eventually selling over 200 million units. But the most important part of that story is that Akio relied on his intuition and vision, not market research, to make that product. In fact, many Sony employees believed the machine wouldn't sell because it couldn't record audio like their other products. But Akio has always believed that you can make innovative new types of products and then educate the public about them. As he wrote in this book, "The public doesn't know what is possible, but we do." End quote. To summarize this lesson, Sony invests 6 to 10% of their sales into new research and development, but it's also crucial for them to have a well-defined vision. Betamax was invented after Ibuka challenged engineers to make a video cassette the size of a paperback book, and the ultra-popular Sony Walkman was based on Akio's intuition of what people wanted, not market research. Okay, and finally we have lesson 7, compete well, thriving amidst constant change. When Akio founded or co-founded Tokyo Telecommunications Engineering Company in that small Tokyo store, electronics were very primitive. They still used glass vacuum tubes, which often burnt out and had to be replaced. Yet over the last 70 years, we've come to expect our products to constantly become more reliable and powerful and useful. So a high-tech company must always be introducing new things and not relying on past success. As this book was being published, the CD format was replacing older audio formats like cassette tapes and vinyl records. Some American companies were reluctant to adapt to that change, and Akio was warning that they would have a hard time surviving if they did not adapt. So it's ironic that 15 years after this book was published, Apple would introduce the iPod and iTunes, and they would adapt to that trend of digital music before Sony. And even more recently, companies like Spotify adapted to the trend of streaming music subscriptions before Apple. They managed to build a huge billions of dollars business because of that. So you can see technology is constantly pushing forwards. Now, Jeff Bezos, who I'm sure we all know, he says it's important to put yourself out of business before your competitors do. He learned that lesson the hard way when Amazon's CD music sales were destroyed by Apple's new iTunes products. So a few years after that, Jeff Bezos made sure that Amazon released the best ebook reader before any other company could. And he did that even though ebooks could have destroyed their core business of selling paperback books, paper books. They took that risk, released the Kindle, and now they have a virtual monopoly on the ebook market. And if you want to learn more about the story of Amazon's rise and Jeff Bezos's life, you can check out our summary of The Everything Store by Brad Stone. So back in the 1980s, when this book was published, many Americans were concerned that the American manufacturing industry was being hollowed out by so many imported products from Japan. And some politicians were calling for more trade protectionism, which is an easy solution to sell to voters who are worried about their jobs. However, Akio Morita believes that protectionism only hurts consumers because then companies no longer need to compete so much to offer the best products, quality, or service. And he says rather than protecting old low-level work, which will eventually be done by robots anyway, employees should instead be retrained and continually re-educated into the new positions as they're required. He says that Japanese companies compete with each other ruthlessly in their country, which makes them so competitive abroad. Ironically, they have a unique approach of constant improvement of quality. And it's ironic that that approach comes from American thinkers like W. Edwards Deming. And over 50 years, they were able to improve their quality so much that Made in Japan went from being a marker of low quality on a product to a symbol of high quality and of pride. On the other hand, when Akio was invited to the Soviet Union in 1975, he was given tours around their television factories, and he was not impressed. He saw what the results of a lack of competition resulted in, and he saw that their products were very low quality, and he saw that as being a result of the indifferent, plodding attitude of the workers, which was a direct consequence of them not having that pressure of competition. To summarize this final lesson, businesses should always be moving forwards and embracing new technologies, even if those threaten their existing businesses. Just like how Sony began making CD players even though it would cut into their cassette player sales, competition leads to continuous improvement and better quality products for consumers. Okay, and let's finish off with three practical action steps and questions that you can use to apply this book in your life. Step number one, if you have a business or product idea, identify a specific group of target buyers who have a matching need for your idea, and then contact 10 of them. You know, this is just like how Akio couldn't sell his first tape recorders until he identified courts and school systems as ideal target prospects. Other books about entrepreneurship, like The Lean Startup, they also talk about this approach of contacting people in your target market, and you may be surprised at how many of them will be willing to talk or answering a casual email and tell you about exactly what they are looking for in a product. Okay, step number two is, what one thing could you do this month to build more of a family-like feeling with your coworkers or employees? To get you started, on the book summary page, I've linked to an article from the website Workamajig, which lists 35 pretty decent team-building activities. And of course, this will be most useful if you're in a management position or if you have some kind of a business. And action step number three, in your industry or in whatever business niche you're in or thinking of going in, list three areas of trends that are growing, and also list three areas and trends that are declining. And then think about some ways that you can invest more of your time and effort into the growing trends. I personally find websites like Statista.com to be useful for researching trends about what's growing and what's shrinking. It can also be useful to just look at what topics are popular on social media and the news websites. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed this summary, and I'll see you in the next one.